Welcome back to the Man and Got Your Bone Deep podcast. I'm Claire Marker, Head of Client Service, and hi to my co-host today, Tim. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Claire. Very pleased to be back. I'm Tim Pritchard, Joint Head of Create, and today we're joined by a special guest, Zara Chatou, our Head of Strategy. Hi, Zara.
Hello. Hi, Tim. Hi, Claire. How are you both doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Zara. And you, Claire, are you well?
I'm very well, thank you, Tim. No awkward pauses this time. That was smashing. Really nice to hear from you, Zara. Okay, so Zara, we are up and running now. As the most glamorous lady in the agency, I wondered, have you dressed up for this very important podcast with Tim and I?
In terms of today, far from glamorous. I've just returned from a mini beast hunt with my daughter in the garden as part of the joy that is homeschooling. So not so glamorous today.
Well, I was about to say today, my shoes are bunny rabbit slippers. So that's exciting for you all on this podcast. And Timbo, always a snappy dresser at the best of times. Have you dressed up today?
A little bit worried. I'm down to my last iron shirt. So desperate measures over here.
As long as it's not down to your pants for this podcast, we are totally fine and can proceed. Okay, so enough about collective COVID-19 wardrobes. It's Zara's mind that we are interested in today. So for those of you who missed last week's podcast, first of all, go and listen to it right now. Ho ho. We teed up the theme for today, which I personally think is going to be fascinating. So the whole industry has talked lots and lots about the impact of COVID-19. But Zara's actually here to talk to us about the psychological impact. So the role of what Zara has called trauma in our lives, as well as in communications from brands. So how might brands start to think about evolving their roles in the cultural narrative of trauma? So Zara, can I start by asking why this topic?
As you say, you know, there's some really interesting, there are loads of really interesting point of view pieces out there. I'm personally, I guess, curious about the impact COVID-19 is having on our minds and really having on our brain, because I talk about trauma, and trauma is defined as a perceived or a real threat to our to ourselves, to our identity, to a big part of who we are. And when we're under threat, our brain behaves in certain ways. It behaves in a much more primitive way. And this is interesting because it just starts to trigger certain behaviours. And so I've started to explore this in more detail, really considering what is this primitive state of mind? How does trauma physically activate the primitive state of mind? How does this affect our decisions? And what does this mean for brands?
Thanks, Zara. In terms of your first point, you talk about trauma as leading to a return to a primitive state of mind. Can you explore that a little more and tell us a bit about how you're defining trauma?
Trauma is defined as a perceived or actual threat to our existence or our identity, and it is typically associated with ambiguity and unpredictability, which is, of course, kind of, you know, the space we're operating in at the moment. But physically, it creates a significant amount of fear in the nervous system. And what this does is it activates the most primitive part of the brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala is responsible for fight or flight. And the key thing with it is it acts fast and not smart, and it triggers certain behaviors. It triggers short-term thinking, because thinking beyond that's overwhelming and only reinforces the uncertainty. We tend to operate in a state of distraction. At times of kind of inner acute stress, our curiosity can be challenged. So if you think about if there's an animal fleeing for his life, even if the most incredible food is in front of him, he's not going to stop and think about that. He's going to flee. So our curiosity is challenged. And this is all happening unconsciously. So it's making us much more reliant on bias taking over decisions. So I'd say that's really kind of what I mean by the effect that trauma is having on our kind of more primitive part of the brain.
Okay, Zara, I just thought that explanation was beautiful, really, really clear, and something that I think we can actually all relate to. I know we are talking about trauma and we've gone into a more emotional side of things, but I just wondered for a second if we could talk about, is there a more positive side to this state that we're in? So in the last podcast, we talked a lot about trends that were here to stay. And one of them might have been how we came together as a community more, or kindness came in. Actually, just wondering down a slightly different path for a second, is there a more positive connotation to this as well as this trauma?
I think there's always something positive to take out of most things. And, you know, we're talking about trauma as a threat to our identity, and a huge part of who we are is our connections to others. And whilst this is being challenged physically, it's absolutely being reinforced and compensated for in other ways. Because often when a part of you is threatened, when your identity is threatened, you fight for it more. And we're definitely seeing that in our social connections. So on a personal level, the number of kind of Zoom quizzes that I'm involved in is, you know, out of control with different groups of people, be that, you know, my university friends or my family abroad. I definitely feel connected to a broader group of people. And, you know, Facebook recently released their numbers, 3 billion are now using the platform. That is huge. So we are more connected socially. And beyond social, we're seeing it in our local communities, our desire to support small businesses. There is a sense of togetherness because we're all affected in some way, whether that's directly, indirectly, or just empathizing for those that are. And I'd like to think that this sense of togetherness will continue.
So Zara, we obviously all react to trauma in slightly different ways. My personal way might be described as compulsive snacking right now. I seem to be addicted to some chocolatey pretzel snacks. But my reaction aside, do you think that collective trauma affects sub-communities or individuals differently?
I can completely relate to your addictive chocolatey snacks. I have been addicted to some hobnobs myself. But I think that I do think it's related. It's a distraction. You know, snacking is distraction. It's a form of distraction. And we know we're operating in a state of distraction as well. So, you know, I do in a funny way think that it is connected. But in terms of does collective trauma affect sub-communities or individuals differently by age? I think the reality is that there are, sadly, we're not all affected equally by this. There are some, you know, communities that are more affected by COVID and as a result are more under threat, which is the definition of trauma. So I think there are people who are more affected by this. But also, ultimately, the kind of number one form of resilience through trauma is openness to change. And that is a real mindset there. And so I think people who, and brands, who are more open to change or can make space for change will do better from this.
Great. So we've seen the societal impacts of trauma, but let's start talking about the implications for brands. You mentioned a move away from rational persuasion as a technique to resonate with consumers in this period. But how do brands still ensure that they're selling or moving the brand metrics that are so fundamental to their businesses?
So I think a couple of things. I think first of all, thinking about the behavioural economics side of things, I think we saw this quite early on work really well. I think one behavioural bias is all around authority bias. And I think when we were first going into lockdown, you saw certain brands really signal authority in a positive way to ensure that they were helping people to kind of do the right thing, stay home, you know, whether that was time out, you know, turning into time in, or whether that was Nike. You know, there were a few brands that were communicating in ways that were reinforcing authority to do the right thing. So I think that was really interesting. I think moving forward, the brands, like I said, if we're saying that adaptation is incredibly important to survival when it comes to trauma, I think it's really interesting to explore the brands that have been really quick to sort of shift and morph and change to what people need right now. And I think there's some lovely examples, you know, whether that be Estee Lauder companies shifting production to make hand sanitizer, or, you know, whether it's, you know, Heinz providing free breakfast to children with need. There's some really interesting examples of brands that are essentially behaving in ways beyond communications often. I think, you know, it can be product led. It's definitely in the doing, not just in the saying. And I think they're doing, you know, they're succeeding because of it. And I think they are absolutely signaling the right things and really adapting their offer to what people need right now, how brands can support you right now, because it is, it's such a challenging time. So anything a brand can do to support you, even if that means pivoting its, you know, its production, is going to be really powerful.
It feels like we've seen a couple of different methods employed by brands in working within the pandemic. At the one end, you've got the symbolic, and at the other end, you've got the comforting. Is it fair to say it's sort of an axis, or is there another way of looking at this?
I think that's a really interesting axis, Tim. I think you're right. I think thinking about it in terms of what people need from me right now, and playing a role that's very supportive and helpful, is ultimately going to be really important. But, you know, I think that should be done with optimism where it can be, and positivity, because that's really what we need, and empathy. And to your spectrum, that can really work across that, you know, and even at times entertaining. I mean, a lot at times entertaining, in fact, because we're really looking for that. So I think there are some interesting examples of how brands can do that across that spectrum.
So there's clearly a role for us to understand how consumers perceive brands in these changing circumstances, but how tangibly can marketers understand what role their brands are playing in customers' lives?
I think, number one, it's really important to understand consumer sentiment right now. Tim, I know your team do a lot of work in this space around kind of understanding what consumers are looking for, what they're asking for. You know, I know the Insight team have their snapshots panel where they are constantly putting forward questions to the, you know, NatRep population to understand what people need right now. But I also think it's about being really clear on your brand values too, and making sure that what you're doing is kind of anchored in your values and what you stand for, and connecting with what people need right now. But I think there are quite a few useful ways of understanding what consumers want. And I mean, you know, we are so much more connected, as we spoke about before. And I think giving a voice, you know, people, it's not even given a voice to our audiences. Our audiences obviously have a voice and they are using it. And I think keeping close to this is really important to understand even just the tone of voice. Because I think, you know, everyone will have the right intentions, but understanding even the right tone of voice and being really sensitive to so many different parts of how we communicate is going to be really key.
Do you think it's slightly more challenging for a brand that has heritage versus a newer, more modern, slightly more dynamic brand to operate in this space?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think if fundamentally trauma, if the way to move through trauma is around adaptation, then the question becomes, can brands that have more heritage or are more established, are they able to adapt as quickly, or are they steeped in traditions that make it challenging to adapt? And yes, perhaps it's true of some traditional brands, perhaps, you know, there is more of a traditional mindset or culture. But I have to say that we're seeing a lot of great work from the established players. You know, take John Lewis Partnership and, you know, the work they're doing with Fern Cotton on Feel Good Fridays, and just kind of creating this real sense of nesting in your home, you know, and supporting you through that is really interesting. And it's not because they're a modern brand or a traditional brand. It's because their brand values are anchored in, you know, support and partnership and togetherness. And I think that's hugely important right now. And so I think it's less a question about whether you're established or you're a challenger brand. It's more about your mindset and whether you're open to change and adapting to what consumers need right now.
I think that's key, Zara. I think what you've brought to us today is fascinating, the idea of this collective trauma, what that is doing to people, our state of mind, and implications for brands operating in this brave new world. And I really believe what you're saying is true, that brands need to be open to understanding this trauma, understanding the changes that means for their audiences and their brands. And I love the behavioural economics cues that you've started to get into. I really think that's quite a valuable area for us to get into in the future. You've made me think, Zara, you're obviously an incredibly well-read woman. And I have to confess, as I've been sat at my desk doing this, I can actually see two strategy books that I've borrowed from you over the years and have forgotten to return. So that's exciting. And I will bring those in when I next see you, I promise. But if anyone wanted to do any additional reading or listening in this area, are there any books that you would direct people to, or fellow podcasts that you have heard, or articles that you've read? If someone really wanted to start understanding more about this this primitive state of mind, any recommendations for us?
I think a really good book, I mean, it's an oldie but a goodie, is obviously Thinking Fast and Slow. Because that really goes into the two parts of, you know, how our brain works. And this bit that we've talked about today is very much the fast, not smart, kind of autopilot, survival mode, that state. So it's, you know, that's a great book to read. Also, you know, I'll have to mention Schottens, because, you know, I think behavioral economics is a really interesting place to play in right now. And, you know, Richard Schotten's The Choice Factory is a brilliant book with some really smart cues within this space. And as we are in autopilot more, we are much more reliant on our biases, and behavioral economics really kind of works with these. So I think there's some really interesting techniques there too. So I think if I was to say a top two, it would be those two.
Those are wonderful recommendations. I agree. I think they are great places to start if you wanted to do more reading and understanding in this area. So great recommendations. Thank you, Zara. So I think we need to start wrapping up. And I wondered if we've covered a great deal of ground today in the points of view that you've brought across and the questions that we've asked. But do you think you could start to pull out what you think are the biggest themes you've spoken to us about today?
Yes, I think, you know, I would summarise it in key points. Firstly, recognize that your most primitive parts of your brain is being triggered right now, and that is what acts fast, not smart. So be aware of that. Secondly, the number one rule of survival is adaptation. And so a curiosity and openness to change will be really important, and shifting from what do I need to say to what do people need to hear from me right now will be a really, really important signal for brands. And then I think, you know, finally, it's a lovely invitation to brands to rethink how they can serve people and adapt to their needs.
Okay, thank you, Clever Biscuit. That was a wonderful summation of the podcast today. And we are out of time. So that was a joy as always. In addition to our incredible guest today, Zara Chatu, I'd like to thank Matt Mint behind the scenes for producing us today, and both Matt and my co-host Tim Pritchard for creating this podcast series. And to our lovely listeners, we very much hope that you can join us next week. We are going to be joined by our Chief Strategy Officer, Paddy Adams, and he's going to be talking to us about an absolutely fascinating area. So to our lovely clients, as well as our friends across the industry, it is a huge thank you for me. We really do appreciate you giving us your time as always today. We absolutely love recording this for you. We genuinely hope you got as much out of today's podcast as we did. So on to next week, we have an absolute belter for you. Our Chief Strategy Officer, Paddy Adams, will be joining us with his dulcet Scottish tones. So make sure that you don't miss that. And until then, you remain, as always, our faves. Goodbye.